Good evening, everyone. This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and this is South Cars, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This net is conducted under the guidelines of the South Cars organization and further follows the rules outlined in FCC Part 97 and Good Amateur Practice. This SCAR server is supplied by the Great Lakes Reflector System, provided by Kilo Bravo 8, Zulu Golf Lima, and all contacts and requests for information will be handled through the net control. When contact with another station is made, please move off the system and establish your contact direct so the net may continue. In fairness to all, short-time stations will not be recognized as such. All stations will be worked in the order in which they have checked in. Information regarding our HF operation may be found at www.southcars.com and for this digital operation at www.voip.southcars.com. Your net control actually for this session is Mr. Gary from Syracuse, New York. Call sign is KC2RMO. I'm merely opening it up for him. My name is Kathy. My call sign is Kilo 6 Sierra United November. My location is Vero Beach, Florida, where it's been a very beautiful day. Still about 72 degrees, high of 80 today, and maybe a low of 67. But a very beautiful day, and it's a very low humidity tonight. So, prior to starting, I'd like to ask if there's any emergency traffic or anything out of the ordinary that needs to be handled. If so, please come aboard. Hearing no emergency traffic, that's always a great thing. You know, Mr. Gary, I want to once again wish you a happy birthday, but we did find out today another one of our NCSs had a birthday last week. But is there anyone else celebrating a birthday either last week or this upcoming week that would like to come aboard so we could say happy birthday? All right, it doesn't look like we have any birthday stations. This is South Cars VOIP Global Family Hour. The intent of this net is to encourage members, their families, and their friends worldwide to enter into an informal social net highlighting third-party traffic through the member station. Our program for this Saturday evening is a very special one, remembering JFK, the assassination, him himself. And I know we have a great program ahead of us. I want to advise everyone that I always record these sessions. So if you've been part of this program tonight, you will definitely be part of the recording. And it may be posted on our website as a podcast, so look for that in the future. But I'm not going to go through any announcements tonight because I know we have a great program ahead of us. I'm going to call on our NCS this evening, Mr. Gary up there, where he says it's starting to snow. KC2RMO, I just want to tell you one thing. Keep those 7 to 10 inches up in your area so they don't come to us in South Florida. But I'll turn the reins over to you. Thanks for allowing me to open it this evening. KC2RMO from Kilo 6 Sierra United November. The floor is now yours.
Well, thank you, Kathy, and indeed, it is starting to snow out there. It is 22 degrees right now in Syracuse's beautiful outer Comstock section, and the snow is coming down just gradually. We've got, they're coming in little bits, little bursts, I guess I should say. Squalls are coming through right now. We are under a lake effect snow warning, and the city is expecting to see anywhere from 7 to 10 inches tonight. It's kind of business as usual for Syracusans, but it's always nice to see that first major snow of the season. Let me just buy a nickel here. Here we are on the 50th anniversary of one of our nation's greatest losses, I swear. In 1963, the sun was brighter, and we saw it more often. The air was fresher, and the whole world seemed to be on the move. The American century was on the rise. We were looking for the modern way of doing everything. We were taking our very first steps into space, and it seems like everywhere you looked, there was something with a space theme. I even remember bugging my mom to get me some Orbit toothpaste. For the first time in our history, it meant something to be young. In 1963, it was all about the future, and we were ready for it. And it couldn't come soon enough. We had heroes, real heroes then. For me, it was any given Mercury astronaut, Mickey Mantle, and our president. He was the embodiment of all the dynamic energy that was moving this country in the early 60s, a young man, 43 when he was inaugurated, who was leading a whole new generation into the future. He and his wife Jackie represented to us a world that had wonderful idealism and starting to become part of the national psyche. The press named it Camelot by Nickel. In 1963, his future was cut short, and so much of this country's idealism and optimism was cruelly taken from us. Camelot was no more. We were in a state of shock that many of us never fully recovered from. We watched in horror as our president was murdered before our eyes on TV. To this day, we still don't have all the answers as to what really was behind it, what the real reasons for assassinating the president were. There are plenty of theories, and 50 years later, still plenty of secrecy surrounding the tragedy. Because tonight's topic is so complex, I thought we'd divide it into three points of discussion. First, we'll talk about your memories of that day in Dallas. Now, if you're old enough to remember, I think you know where you were on that day. Now, secondly, we'll take a look at some of the mystery surrounding the assassination. After all these years, nobody has adequately been able to definitely state who all the players were and exactly what the motive was for the assassination. It's been the topic of a major motion picture and countless articles and documentaries through the years. So what do you think? After all these years and all the mystery and all the misinformation, will we ever know the true story? And finally, we'll take a brief look at the life of JFK. Tonight's topic, the assassination of JFK, we'll start taking check-ins right now. What are your memories of that day? I'm KC2RMO. We're looking for check-ins right now on South Cars.
6 Victor, good evening, sir.
Sierra United November.
Victor X-Ray Papa.
Hey, we've got a great way to get things going there. We'll kick it off with 6 Victor. Come on aboard, Gordon.
Well, thank you, Gary. Good evening to you, and good evening to those that are assembled. Gordon here, KY6V, Central Florida. Currently about 75 degrees, going down to about 60 tonight. And a little bit of rain on the forecast from what I'm seeing. Gary, I want to thank you for running this show tonight. It's very special to a lot of us. I can tell you, sir, that I was 26 years young when this happened. Still a little bit wet behind the ears, I suspect. I was in my first home, first house that I purchased that belonged to us. It was 10:30 in the morning. That's Pacific AM time. Of course, it happened at 12:30 Central time. And why I was home, Gary, I have no idea. I've racked my brain here today and a part of yesterday saying, why were you home on Friday, Gordon? But at that particular time, I was an engineer for CBS with a 50 kW transmitter site, and I was on 4, excuse me, and off 3. So I'm assuming, hang on a minute, get rid of that frog. I'm assuming that, you know, that's just the way the schedule was. Well, anyway, this thing happened. I glued myself, Gary, to the TV set, CBS channel, of course. Cronkite was on there giving the blow-by-blow description. Tears coming out of his eyes. It was just something I've never forgotten. And when you get to the conspiracy type issues, you know, I'm still motivated to think that there's something behind it. I'm not very pleased with the fact that the behind-the-scenes documentation on this is still sealed and will be till what, 2038? I think you're going to cover that here later on in the program. But I just don't think that we should be shielded from things like this. Now let me buy another nickel. This subject has got me on the soapbox here, Gary. You know, a lot of us are educated just as well, if not more, than the people in the government that are trying to tell us how to do something when to do it and how to do it, and it will be done this way. Do you remember the Roswell, New Mexico situation, Gary, when we had this so-called down foreign alien spacecraft? And the Air Force put on a great big blue book report. You remember how many years ago that was? And have you read anything on their findings, Gary? I'll shut up and send it back to you. But Big Brother is listening. KY6V, over.
You know, I could do this one all night long. Okay, you are talking about one of my favorite things to talk about, and that is Roswell and the whole UFO thing. There was so much cover up and so much misinformation and disinformation. But I'll tell you something: you can draw a very strong parallel to what is going on, or what happened with Roswell, and to what is going on with the information about this assassination. The technique is exactly the same. You know, you let out a little bit of information, and then you change the story, and then you give a little bit of truth, and you know, a whole bunch of lies. So they have a technique, and they do it, and I am very much in agreement with you. We will be talking about some of the conspiracy stuff and how it's all going down. But you're right; those records, there are still records that are sealed. Guess who's refusing to disseminate the information? It's three little letters called the CIA, and there is some evidence to support the fact that the CIA, and this is just hearsay, but there is evidence to support, or to suggest, I guess I should say, that the CIA is the only conspiracy theory that cannot be debunked out of all the conspiracy theories. They are the only thing that we cannot disprove, for better or for worse. Now, it could be just the nature of the way they do things, but there is evidence to suggest they were involved in the assassination, sad to say. But we'll talk about that in a little bit. We will move it along now to K6SUN. Kathy, come on aboard. Hello there.
Well, good evening, Mr. Gary, and everyone that's connected this evening. Actually, I remember it vividly, even though it's a long time ago. I was about 14 years old. I was in an 8th grade science class. I remember it vividly, someone coming over the intercom, and I think what they said was about the shooting. I've been trying to think and whether he was being transported, and I think that's what they had told us, being transported to the hospital. And I'm not sure if they ever came back on to tell us that he had passed on. But I remember, like Gordon was saying, being glued to everything. As a young child, I couldn't believe something like this could happen. You know, it happened to our president. And so, you know, I was very young, but it's very heavy on my heart now, and that's one reason I told you I was doing something with my children at Data House. I did that on Friday. It was the anniversary, and we had a magazine. It was called Upfront. The title of the article was The Death of a President. So, you know, most of my kids at Dale Cassin's, if I would ask them what today was or what it meant, could not tell me. But I'm going to drop it here a short moment. But I'll tell you what I did on Friday with my children at Data House. All right, we usually say the Pledge of Allegiance, and after we said the Pledge of Allegiance, I asked the children, I have about 15, I asked them what was the importance of today, and very rarely all 15 raised their hands and came up and said it was the anniversary, the 50th anniversary of the John F. Kennedy assassination. I asked them, Did they know where it took place? They told me. I asked them the time. And that was a very rare thing that they could tell me the exact time. So I decided to have them read this article and summarize it for me. I was very impressed in what these children, ages 15 to 18, knew that maybe many adults don't, or their feelings behind it. But I'll turn it back to you. I wanted to check in early just to merely tell you that I was a very young person in a science class when this was divulged to us. So back to you, Gary, from Kilo 6 Sierra United November. And I hope you got my similarities between the assassination of Lincoln and Kennedy. And maybe if you can't share that, I will do that later. So back to you, Gary.
Well, thanks, Kath. And we'd love to have you share that, actually. That'd be super. I remember I was in, it would have been a social studies class, believe it or not, when that happened. And I remember it coming over the PA at school. The principal of the school made the announcement. And I remember our teacher starting to cry. She actually started to cry. And they lined us up. And we had to go down to the main entrance of the school, or one of the main entrances of the school, and we were all released. I lived a block away from the school, so I just ran home and turned the TV on, you know, and just watched it, and just you know, stayed glued to that. And I, just like everybody else, I couldn't imagine anything like that ever happening. And just wondering what was going to happen. And yeah, to those who may not be old enough to remember this, I just want to throw this in. What a powerful thing that was for people. To this day, when I watch what happened, when I watch the newsreels, you know, the documentaries of the assassination, and watch the moments before it happened, and you know, I still get a tear in my eye when I watch that, and I'm not ashamed to say that. There was so much emotion with that, and he was so loved by the people, and we were such a different people back then, and it all went away in just a moment. You know, it literally took just a few seconds to completely change the character of this country. So it is. It was a very, very powerful, very emotional thing. But like Gordon was saying earlier, you just wonder: are we ever going to really know what happened? Are we going to ever really get the story? They keep pushing things off. Let me just buy a nickel. We're going to get to this in a little bit, but just the fact that after 50 years, the records were supposed to be opened up to everybody. We should have known immediately what was going on, and they just shut that right down. And people have been waiting for 50 years, and we're going to have to wait longer to even get the names of the people that really are involved in this. And the thing is that there is some activity going on right now to try to get those open. But why do we have to wait this long? You know, this was probably the worst thing that ever happened in this country, and we still never have answers for that. I don't know, but we'll talk about it in a little while. Thank you, Kathy. I appreciate that very much. And please come back. Please come back and tell us the similarities. I'd love to have you do that. We'll move it along right now, though. We'll go out to Ohio. And Rick, VXP. Hello there, sir. Let's hear from you.
This is Rick, N1VXP, Chillicothe, Ohio. First, I got to make a little mention about the weather. Currently 29 degrees. We did hit a high of 44. But weatherman, I don't know what's going on. Earlier they said the low tonight was going to be 20. But they kicked that down to 13. So I guess we're going to definitely be in a good freeze tonight. I've got an extra blanket ready for the bed. Got a nice handmade comforter that was given to me from somebody in Pennsylvania, so it was an Amish comforter. I've used it several nights, and it's pretty warm, but always have an extra blanket just in case. We usually end up having a unknown why, but sometimes we lose the power on our first super cold night, so I'm ready for that to happen if it does. Definitely to try to stay warm. I was in school in New York State. I remember that date quite well. It was right after lunch. I was in a, I forget what class I was in. I think it might have been English. And next thing you know, the PA system, the secretary of the school who does the announcements came over the PA system, said, "I have a very important announcement," and we could hear in her voice that, you know, she was having a hard time. And the principal came on. Let me drop for a second. And he came on with the first announcement that the president was shot. And, you know, that was kind of a shock to everybody. The principal, she was very upset about it. Some of the kids started crying, and it was something that we all just, you could hear a pin drop in the whole room. It was like total silence. And it took us about maybe 10 or 15 minutes to finally more or less start talking. And the teacher said, "Well, we're not going to do anything more for a while until the end of the period." And it was a while later. Next thing you know, we hear another announcement of the death of President Kennedy, which really shocked us. And he said, "Okay, I think we're going to let the school out within an hour so you can go home and be with your family." It was quite a shock, something that I always keep that in mind on that date. The following day, my father was really, he really enjoyed President Kennedy and thought I remember my dad said, "He's the best president we've ever had." Little did we know, my brother and I, that the next morning I went to a church play rehearsal, and right after rehearsal, the priest came up to me and he said, "I have to see you in the office for a minute." And it was a shock to me that my father had passed away that morning. So double shock within that same date. Let me drop one more second. So it's something I always keep in mind every year, November 22nd and November 23rd. Two dates I'll never forget. I always keep in mind. I've been watching, there's been several good programs on TV about the background with the assassination with Jack Ruby and Lee Harvey Oswald. And something else that came up in mind in I did a little research, that you talk about cover-ups. December 11th, 1960. I don't think people realize that there was an actual attempt of an assassination of President Kennedy at that date, which never came through. It was a guy by the name of Richard Paul Pavlik. P-A-V-L-I-C-K, had his body and car were wired with several sticks of dynamite. He was going to ram President Kennedy's motorcade, but he had decided, since President Kennedy's wife and children were with him, that he wasn't going to do it. Something in the way of a good cover-up that it was never really publicized, and something that I say to myself, well, quite a bit of cover-up on the whole issue of President Kennedy. N1TXP, back to net control.
Wow, Rick, that's just to have those two things happen in the course of 24 hours, it's That's a lot to deal with, that's for sure. You mentioned a lot of things there that had a lot of meat to them. One thing that came to mind before I lose the thought. When you're talking about this guy with the dynamite, and I'd come across that before researching this a little bit, and it was like one of those little side notes. Not a lot of details on it. You're right. There's virtually none that I could find. But it seems like every president, you know, you end up with a whole bunch of failed attempts like that, and that's just part of the business. But one of the things that I think was particularly important to kids growing up then was to see, this was a young man and this beautiful, stunning wife of his that had two kids in the White House, and they weren't that much younger than we were, you know. Here was a family. It was like mom and dad in the White House, you know. So I think the kids really related to that. That there was, there was a family in the White House, kind of like your family at home, except that they were just bigger than life, you know. I think that just solidified that relationship between the young people of this country and the family in the White House. I've always kind of thought that was something that made them extra special. As far as the temperature goes, we're going to get down to about 18 here, and talk about changing the subject, right? We're going to be getting down to about 18, and that wind's going to be, they're talking, about 25 miles an hour, so I think you probably had something similar, we're looking in that, they're depending upon who you listen to, they're talking about 7 to 10 inches in the city proper. Just kind of depends on which way the wind blows off the lake, but it's going to be an interesting night. So if it really gets going, they say between 9 and 2 should be the heaviest. So I'll be kind of looking out the window. We live for this stuff up here. The topic tonight, let me just buy a nickel. I don't know if you. I don't think you heard David Stephens says, "No, we don't." It's like, some of us do. Topic tonight is remembering JFK, and we're talking about the assassination and where you were at the time and what you were doing and what your memories of the assassination were. Before we do that, I want to do one more round of check-ins, just talking about your memories of that time. For those who may or may not be familiar with the whole situation, there's been a lot of documentaries on the air. As a matter of fact, Rick, you were talking about documentaries. I saw one on Turner Classic Movies or whatever it was. It was a very early documentary about it. It was all black and white, as a matter of fact. It was actually very well done because the stuff was fresh, the news was fresh at the time. In spite of the fact that there wasn't a lot of depth to it, it was all fresh news. It was almost like they'd put it together as a newsreel piece. This was about maybe it was an hour documentary, but. It kind of looked newsreelish to me, and it was very good. It was a nice piece of history anyway. But for those who may not remember it firsthand, I'm sure you know right now that John F. Kennedy, our 35th president, was assassinated at 12:30 Central Standard Time on Friday, November 22nd in 1963 in Dealey Plaza, Texas. That's in Dallas. Dealey was fatally shot while traveling with his wife Jacqueline, Texas Governor John Connally, and his wife Nellie. And there was a presidential motorcade in which the president was riding in a Lincoln limousine. He was assassinated. A series of shots to his head. was the cause of his death. There is a lot of controversy as to what was behind this or who was behind it. And one of the statistics in people who were asked about this, about what you think, was there a cover-up involved in this? 80% of Americans polled believed that there was some sort of a cover-up involved in the assassination of John Kennedy. So, before we get into that discussion, we'll just continue this discussion a little bit longer. And what are your memories of that day in Dallas? What were you doing? Where were you? What made an impression on you? We'll take check-ins right now on the Global Family Hour. I'm KC2RMO, and this is South Cars.
6 Victor, recheck number 1.
The Sierra United November.
We have 6 Victor, an SUN, and anybody else want to come aboard?
Off the Zulu Echo.
Okay, RF station, one more time, please.
Golf Zulu Echo.
We have Golf Zulu Echo, and we'll take you ahead of Gordon and Kathy, so we'll take you right now. Please come on aboard, Golf Zulu Echo.
Okie dokie. That's the only thing I was 40 years old at that time, so I was kind of contemporary, but I don't remember where I was. Maybe I have a poor memory. My son reminded me where we lived. We lived in Newark, Delaware at that time. Prior to that, I do remember, though, that after that incident where they were going to bring the missiles over here, everybody was building bomb shelters, and they were selling houses with bomb shelters in the basements. And, they kind of acted then as some of them are acting now, building all these shelters, and they all finally filled with water, and they did the work. You don't need a bomb shelter. Anyway, don't remember where I was. Do remember a lot of stuff, you know, on the news and all that kind of stuff, but I don't remember where I was, W1G City.
Well, that's the way we used to do business back then in the early 60s. You were trying to keep up with the Joneses, and the Joneses had a bomb shelter. You needed one. Are you, by any chance, are you a South Cars member? And what was your first name again, please?
Name's Paul, Peter Abel, Uncle Love. No, I'm not a member. I have to, we don't have a computer or any of that kind of stuff. So my son may fix me up with one over here.
Well, great to have you along, and once you get yourself equipped, come on aboard with us, and we'll be happy to sign you up. No cost, and the more the merrier. Thanks for being with us tonight. We'll move it along to 6 Victor. Gordon, come on aboard.
Well, thank you, Gary. Hello to the Florida Keys. That's where GZE is located. KY6V here. You know, I think we need to correct things to be politically correct, Gary. It's not called a bomb shelter anymore. It's called a safe room. And I grew up through World War II, and I had my own personal bomb shelter, I might say, that my father built out there in the Hawaiian Islands when the Pearl Harbor episode was going on. And I turned that into my playroom. But at any rate, two quick comments. I was sitting back listening to this, and I thought about, do you remember through the years, Gary, about everybody talking about, be careful, Big Brother is listening. And look as what has happened, particularly with this NSA situation, you know, bingo, bingo. The other comment I wanted to make that I was thinking about is Oswald's comment, I'm just a patsy. Maybe you'll get into that, Gary. KY6V, back to net.
Hey, thank you, sir. If Big Brother's listening to me, he's having the laugh of his life. But, you know, it's funny. You mentioned, you know, the safe room or bomb shelter. We had, and again, you had to know the neighborhood that I grew up in. It was just an amazing place to grow up. It really was. We had everybody from state Supreme Court justices to guys that were bakers, you know, living there. It was just this incredible mix. And we had a lot of university professors, a lot of symphony musicians, a lot of political types. It was just this great mix of people. But nobody had a bomb shelter except for Mr. Lewis. Mr. Lewis had a bomb shelter, and he became the king of the neighborhood with that thing. He was like the neighborhood do-it-yourself champ, you know. And he got the plans, and he built this thing. And you know, this was like you know, he had bragging rights for the whole neighborhood. You know, this thing was great. I mean, he had like a inch and a half, 2-inch thick steel door on this thing, and it was all cinder block, and, you know, he had the air filter on the thing and everything. He could have stayed down there for a while, took up half his basement, but it was, what the heck? You know, he was good in case they dropped it. So, you know, it was pretty cool. But those were not only a kind of a necessity. What the heck? I mean, with what we know nowadays, that you want to talk about conspiracy theories too. You remember being taught that you could survive a nuclear war. You know, that it was actually survivable. I mean, you know, even if you could get through the first 2 weeks sitting down in your basement, when you came out, you were dead anyway. That radiation wasn't going anywhere. You know, so come on, who are they kidding? You know, there was another one of the big fallacies that we lived under. But bomb shelters or safe rooms were a status symbol back then. Let me buy a nickel. As we move things along, we'll go with S-U-N. Hi, Kathy, come on aboard again.
All right, thank you so much, Gary. I'm not going to talk about bomb shelters, but if you can remember, both you, Gordon, and Rick up there in Ohio, very close to my age, or you've been through this time, but way back January 20th, 1961, when President Kennedy made his inaugural speech. And he asked one thing of people listening, and it had an impact on myself as well as a lot of English teachers. Ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. And I remember specifically, I was in the sixth grade, and I think our English teacher said that had such an impact on her life that she wanted us to write an essay on that. And I remember that to this day, how much that had an impact on my life. And I wanted to share that with you. Of course, it's not to do with the assassination or the bomb shelters, but I wanted to share that with you. So I'll turn it back to you, Gary. Okay, C2RMO from Kilo 6 Sierra United November.
Well, you know how these things always go. We always get enough off topic to make things interesting anyway. But we're you know, this covers everything about the president, and not, you know, in addition to the to the assassination, we certainly have room for some of those great words of his too. That was a great speech, and it is often quoted. But bigger than the speech, you know, when you think about it, is you're just where you're going with that how that mobilized an entire generation of young folks. I know that in the years after he made that speech, I know lots of kids that were in the neighborhood that were college students, let's say, were doing things like volunteering in the Peace Corps and things like that. It struck a chord, you know, you should give back to this country somehow, and people did it. People responded to that. It meant something. It was a great speech, and again, the way that people responded was very profound, I don't think we've seen anything like that since. That is where we were with that. I was just kind of doing a little bit of editing here as we go. We've had a lot of interesting in the conspiracy. That's easy for me to say, conspiracy theories. And I think what I'm going to do is I'm just going to jump to that next, because you know we've had a lot of folks interested in that. And again, if you're too young to kind of remember everything surrounding this, basically, in my opinion, and in 80% of the American public's opinion, we've been sold a bill of goods regarding the assassination of President Kennedy. I suppose you cannot take somebody as beloved as that from us and not hide the reason why you did it, you know. There was a reason that he was assassinated. There is a lot of confusion in it. So I'm going to give you an overview of what was going on, or the situation anyway, and then we're going to open it up and hear what you think about this whole business. So let's start with the overview after I buy a nickel. John F. Kennedy was assassinated on November 22, 1963 in Dallas, Texas. Although Lee Harvey Oswald was charged with the crime, he was shot and killed by a man named Jack Ruby 2 days later before a trial could take place. The FBI and the Warren Commission, which was a commission established under President Johnson's directive to investigate the assassination, officially concluded that Oswald was the lone assassin. However, the United States House Select Committee on Assassinations concluded that those investigations were flawed and that Kennedy was probably assassinated as the result of a conspiracy. Kennedy continues to rank highly in public opinion ratings of U.S. presidents. Again, after 50 years, he's still very much loved by those who knew him. Not everyone is satisfied with the Warren Commission's report. Some people think Oswald acted on behalf of another organization. Others think Oswald was speaking the truth when he cried out, "I'm just a patsy," as Gordon said to the media. There are enough inconsistencies and unusual coincidences in Oswald's background to sow the seeds of suspicion. Now, before we get into it, I would like to call on Kathy. And, Kath, if you could come aboard and give us those parallels between the assassination of John F. Kennedy and Abraham Lincoln, this might be a good spot to put that in. So, Kath, we'll call on you right now.
All right, Gary, I'd be happy to. You sort of threw a ball at me, but, you know, when maybe hopefully some of your information will come up with. I'm not sure what the culture of Oswald was, whether he was Soviet Union or something else, so hopefully you'll get into that, because I think there's some information out there. They talk about the Soviet Union. Let me give you some information that actually my children, and I've heard this before, about the similarities between Kennedy and Lincoln, the two assassinations. So let me buy a nickel here, and I'm going to give you some information, and maybe you've seen this information before, but it's really rather interesting. So I'll be back with you in just a moment.
Okay, thanks, Kath. I didn't mean to throw you a curve, but we'll let you get whatever material you need gathered and come back to you in just a second. There have been parallels made to the assassination of John Kennedy and Abraham Lincoln, but while we're waiting for Kathy, just wanted to give you a little background on Lee Harvey Oswald. He was a U.S. citizen. He had renounced his U.S. citizenship and defected to the Soviet Union in 1959. Prior to that, he was a U.S. Marine. He served in the Marine Corps. And there's one of the problems with the lone gunman theory, because based on his record in the Marines, he was such a lousy shot that he couldn't possibly have done what the Warren Commission said that he did. It was a single shot rifle that he was firing. He could not have possibly shot, reload in the amount of time that he did. And his proficiency in shooting was really poor. It was below average, actually. So for him to get that much accuracy in that little time just was impossible based on his track record. Of course, you know, you could say that that was faked too, that the record of his proficiency in marksmanship was faked too. So hard to say. But that's a little tidbit on Lee Harvey Oswald. Let's see if Kathy's back in action here. Kath, do you have the stuff to give to us right now?
Yes, I do, Gary. And actually, I had it. It was just dropping it for a moment, and I was ready to talk when you came back aboard. But I want to share some facts with everyone. You know, JFK was the only president to have received a Purple Heart. I'm not sure if you were aware of that. But he was a medal for soldiers that were wounded or killed in the line of duty. He was a Navy lieutenant that was injured in the Pacific during the World War II. And I remember that PT-109 very well. But let me give you some similarities between Lincoln and Kennedy. And I found this so, so interesting. Lincoln was elected to the Congress in 1846. Kennedy was elected to Congress in 1946. Lincoln was elected president in 1860, and Kennedy was elected president in 1960. Both lost a child while living in the White House. The name of the child for Kennedy was Patrick. He was stillborn. He died 2 days after he was born. Can't exactly remember Lincoln. I think it was something with a T, but I can't remember. Lincoln was directly concerned with civil rights, as you all well know, with the Civil War. And Kennedy, he was directly concerned with civil rights as well. Lincoln had a secretary named Kennedy who told him not to go to the theater. Kennedy had a secretary named Lincoln who told him not to go to Dallas. Let me drop it here for a moment. Lincoln was shot in the back of the head in the presence of his wife. And the same thing happened to Kennedy. Lincoln was shot in Ford Theater. Kennedy was shot in a Lincoln made by a Ford. Lincoln was shot on a Friday as well as Kennedy. The assassin for Lincoln, John Wilkes Booth, was known by three names comprised of 15 letters, the same for Lee Harvey Oswald. Booth shot Lincoln in a theater and fled to a warehouse. Oswald shot Kennedy from a warehouse and fled to a theater. Booth was killed before being brought to trial. Oswald was killed before being brought to trial. Let me drop it once again. And I have two final facts for you. There were theories that Booth was part of a greater conspiracy. The same thing with Oswald. Lincoln's successor was Andrew Johnson, born in 1808. Kennedy's successor was Lyndon Johnson, born in 1908. So 100 years apart and the same last name. Gary, I hope that you enjoyed that. As I said, my children enjoyed that, and I think maybe everyone else has seen that previously, but there's a lot of similarities out there. I'll turn it back to you, Gary, and I see that VXP has a comment in the text box for you.
Hey, thank you, Kathy. Yeah, I it's funny. I was looking up the info on Lee Harvey Oswald, and I saw you come up in the text box, and I said, well, I may as well finish this. Isn't that amazing stuff, though? That really is. I had heard that before, and every time you hear it, you just go, wow. You know, it's very spooky when you start thinking about it. Thank you so much, really. Thank you very much for coming in with that. It was good to hear it. We will move along to VXP, who has a comment for us. And Rick, come on aboard.
This is N1VXP. The comment was, it was funny that last night, I forget what channel it was, they had a special on Oswald. And part of his interrogation, they knew that he had military prior experience. And it was funny that he kind of tried to hide the fact that he was an expert with the rifle. part of the other parts in that commentary that Egan denied that he owned a rifle. However, his wife said that she knew he had one, and brought the investigators right to the area. When they went to pick up what they thought was a rifle, they found it was a blanket tied up, but there was no rifle involved. So a lot of conspiracies, I shouldn't say conspiracies, but a lot of cover-ups that finally are starting to come true. And I just I want to go back onto this Richard Pavlik. He had claimed that he was convinced that Joseph Kennedy used his ill-gotten wealth to purchase the presidency for John F. Kennedy. And there was a special, about a week ago, that if that particular attempt had been completed, and this is what really gets people scared a little bit, let me drop for a second, that because Kennedy had not had his influence on the world, they felt that it was right at a crucial time with Russia, and they thought that the assassination attempt back in 1960 would have led to World War III, which would have led to a full nuclear attack. I don't know if that would have been true, but I think to myself, wow, if it's that close of a situation with the world, with nuclear war, that something like that could happen, it really makes you wonder at that time what was going on. Of course, the government probably wouldn't want to put their two cents out about, if it was really true. But I kind of think, well, that could have happened, and wonder what we would be doing today. N1PXP, back to net control.
Well, if World War III had happened, what we would be doing today would be mutating. It'd be about the best we could do. Actually, but I'll tell you one thing. If you go back to the days of the Cuban Missile Crisis, and anybody who remembers that remembers that nobody was playing in that deal, that that was the real deal. And we had gotten down to about 14 hours before we really found out how much we weren't playing. There was only one guy that should have been sitting in the Oval Office at that time that could have handled that, and that was John F. Kennedy. He was a great poker player. He knew the right thing to do, and he knew how far he could push it, and that's exactly what needed to be done. I don't think anybody else could have gotten us through that, or could have avoided World War III. He did it by being strong, and it really made a point. But let's get to the question of John, not John, but Lee Harvey Oswald's marksmanship. Boy, say that 10 times fast. Lee Harvey Oswald's marksmanship. I'm having trouble talking tonight. Must be the snow. This is from a blog called the Man from 2063.com. All right, and these are the facts that rest before you. The CBS, a familiar network to some of us, had a reenactment test of the gun and the distance and the target. CBS News did a reenactment in 1967 involving several expert riflemen firing from a 60-foot tower at a moving sled using a similar Mannlicher Karanko rifle. This, by the way, was not a high-end weapon. This was a mail-order rifle. None of these expert riflemen hit the target twice on their first try, and seven of them failed to do so on any try. Now, that's important to remember. These are expert riflemen. The best they could do was to hit the target twice on their first try. None of them could do that. And seven of them failed to do so on any try. That's an important thing to remember. They were also able to fire several practice rounds before the test, so they were warmed up, something that an assassin would not have the ability to do. Let me buy a nickel. The Warren Commission's test, Warren Commission ran tests, and they were equally as bad. The commission paid three expert riflemen to duplicate Oswald's alleged feat. These shooters fired 18 rounds using the very same gun that Oswald used, along with the scope. They fired three rounds with just the iron sights, just without using the scope. These shooters missed the head and neck area of the target 18 out of 18 times using the telescopic sight, and 2 out of 3 times when they used the iron sight. Some of the shots missed the target completely. They were able to take as long as they wanted with the first shot. They were firing from a height of only 30 feet. Oswald was firing from a height of 60 feet. And they were also shooting at a stationary target instead of a moving limousine. I would like to point out a comment here on Oswald's ability as a marksman. And this is from a former Marine. Nelson Delgado was the name of this was this person. He says that Oswald on the firing line was a pretty big joke because he got a lot of complete misses. Delgado told researcher Mark Lane that Oswald was just not that interested in guns. He was always being penalized for not taking proper care of his rifle or cleaning it regularly. Sherman Cooley, another Marine, said that if I had to pick one man in the entire United States to shoot me, I'd pick Oswald. I saw the man shoot. There's no way he could have ever learned to shoot well enough to do what they accused him of doing in Dallas. Let me buy a nickel. We have a couple of comments in the box. We will go to Six Victor and then to OVI. Gordon, come on aboard.
Hey, thanks, Gary. KY6V here. Well, you've covered a lot of stuff that I wanted to mention. You know, my recollection on this, Gary, and it's probably a little fuzzy at this point, but Oswald was run out of the Marine Corps for whatever reason. You know, he was kicked out on his hiney. My recollection also tells me that he spent some time in Russia during this period of time that we're discussing, and also spent some time in Cuba during this period that we're talking about. So I want to see if my recollection is somewhat correct. And for some reason, my recollection of what I've read on this subject is sort of contradictory to what you just said on his marksmanship. So I'll have to go back and study that further. Gary, KY6V, over.
Well, thank you, sir. Yeah, the way that I had heard it was basically he couldn't hit the broadside of a barn. He was below average anyway. I mean, I think he had the minimum qualifications for a marksman in the Marines, and the way he got it was not without, you know, a lot of effort. You know, he did not come natural to him, but he was not the the caliber, and that's no pun intended, of shooter that was required to assassinate a president, you know, from 60 feet up behind a bunch of boxes in a window, shooting at a moving target. They must have been, I don't know what the parade speed would have been, but, you know, 10 or 15 miles an hour, you know, but it's still a moving target. And you're shooting what is pretty much a cheap rifle at a moving target through a scope. And again, when we go back to the two, whether or not you put any faith at all in the Warren Commission, and I don't really put a lot of faith in them at all, the CBS reenactment actually validates what they came up with. You had experts. You had people that were certified experts unable to do what they had said that he did. So I don't you know, right there. You know, it's like if you had somebody that was capable of doing that, that's one thing. But, you know, when you put basically a bozo up in that window and say that he pulled this off, I don't believe it. Let me just buy a nickel. So that's you know, that's one thing, you know, that he just couldn't have done that. He just didn't have the talent to do that. He did go to Russia, and in Russia he renounced his American citizenship. He wanted to become a citizen of the Soviet Union. He was there for a while, found out he didn't like it, begged them to come back home, and I guess they deported him. He took his wife. His wife was a Russian. Marina Oswald was of Russian extraction. She's native Russian. The two of them exited the Soviet Union and came back home. Oswald, I believe, had a less than honorable discharge from the Marine Corps. All his life, he was the typical. I mean, when they chose the person to hang it on, when they were looking for a patsy, they chose the right guy. Here was a guy that all his life never fit in. He, as a child, was the victim of abuse from his parents. He didn't lead a normal childhood. When he finally became old enough to start sending out on his own, he decides he's going to make a name for himself by going into the Marine Corps. That bombs out. He latches on to fair treatment for Cuba movement in the early 60s. Matter of fact, you'll see pictures of him handing out pamphlets for fair treatment for Cuba. Let me buy a nickel. And a lot of pro-communist causes. He was, you know, involved in that. And if you can recall back in the early 60s, that's probably not something you'd want to be associated with. You know, not if you really wanted to be popular. You know, here's a guy, total outsider, just the perfect guy to frame with something like this. You know, here's finally your chance to be the biggest man in history, you know, and they'll make it possible. And of course they set him up, and there's other shooters that are involved here that he doesn't know about. So interesting, but he is the right person to be framing, that's for sure. OBI had a comment. Pete, hello there. Let's hear from you, sir.
Okay, going on this miracle round here. I thought there were two. One in the bush, like they had said. One in the bush and one up there. And the one in the bush might have had a better view of it than the one up there in the skybox. But there was all conjecture. I don't know. At some point in time, they're going to rewrite the history the right way. I think they're keeping that story shut because they didn't want any repercussion. By the time they open up the box, people wouldn't care whether that was it or not. I think it's the delay tactic was just to cool the arena down a little bit so that the exceptions would be more gradual and more acceptable. That's my twist on this whole story. And who in the world is there in the world that would keep the information from us? You know, who is the God up there that's deciding that they shouldn't publicize the truth? And I think there's a lot of witches and goblins in the mix. 84 Oscar Virginia.
Well, Pete, that's the $64,000 question, as they used to say. You know, you can look at all these conspiracy theories, and there's a bunch of popular ones, and you may have heard of these before. I'm just going to read them off or some of the characters, I guess, in these conspiracy theories. There's the Umbrella Man and the Babushka Lady, and let's see, what else do we have here? We've got Beverly Oliver and a host of others, okay, that crop up when you start discussing this. You know, all these theories, I'll get to that specifically in just a moment. All these theories have been pretty much debunked throughout the years. But there is one theory that they cannot debunk, and that is that the CIA ordered, or members of the CIA, whether it was under the auspices of the department, the CIA, or whether it was members of the CIA, ordered the President of the United States assassinated. And that's some heavy-duty stuff. And they are still the ones sitting on the last of the documents that would prove or disprove it. According to Gordon had mentioned a year of 2038. I believe it's 2017 is when they have to surrender those documents. But there are persons that may still be alive that are involved in this. And I think that's the reason why that they are still making sure that nobody knows until that person or persons have left the scene. We will talk about that. I'll throw that out to discussion in a minute. But we do have a comment from KY6D. So Gordon, hello there, sir.
Yeah, sorry to be jumping in so often here, Gary, but you know. Subject very close to all of our hearts, I guess. You know, what you're saying about the capability or incapability of Oswald on his marksmanship raises, obviously, the question, was there a second shooter? And you have just commented on the Umbrella Man, which was an interesting situation. It was suggested, but I don't think it was ever proved, that this guy that was wagging around his umbrella through the umbrella shot a paralyzing dose into Kennedy. Not a bullet shot, but something to demetabolize him very quickly. Any comments on that, sir? KY6V, over.
Well, there's a couple of different, and again, you know, that's the problem. That's the problem with all this, is that it's so, there's it's all conjecture. And you have to just take your best shot and believe what you believe. The Umbrella Man is interesting, because there's one theory that says he's moving this umbrella around, and again, just to set the background for folks who may not be familiar with this, there is a film that a amateur took of the motorcade, and he just happened by accident to catch the moment when the president was assassinated, and this was a gentleman by the name of Zapruder. This film that he took, it's just a couple of minutes worth of film that is probably the best documentary of what happened. In the film, we see a man with an umbrella, and just before the president is shot, he moves this umbrella up and down in a very funny way. It's two or three times that he moves this thing up and down. And some people believe he's signaling a shooter, that this is it, this, you know, take your shot. And some people believe, as Gordon was saying, that there was some way of shooting some sort of a paralyzing dart at the president from where he was sitting. But what they're, I'll read to you what I have here. A person popularly dubbed as the Umbrella Man has been the object of much speculation, and I'm going to buy a nickel. I think we're running out of time. He's the object of much speculation as he was the only person seen carrying and opening an umbrella on the sunny day in Dealey Plaza. As President Kennedy's limousine approached the umbrella man, the man opened up and lifted the umbrella high above his head. And again, if you look at the film, if you've had the opportunity to see the film, it's very unusual for him to be doing this. The man opened up, lifted the umbrella, and then spun or panned the umbrella from east to west clockwise as the president approached and passed him. In the aftermath of the assassination, the umbrella man sat down on the sidewalk before getting up and walking towards the Texas School Book Depository. Some have claimed that the umbrella man was involved in the Kennedy assassination. One commonly held theory is that the umbrella man was signaling the shooter or shooters, and he is depicted in this way in both Oliver Stone's film JFK and an episode of The X-Files. A less common theory, held by L. Fletcher Prouty and others, is that the umbrella man contained a poison dart fired at, or the umbrella rather, contained a poison dart fired at Kennedy to immobilize President Kennedy's muscles. His movements are seen to freeze and cease within 2 seconds of that incident. So, a couple of interesting other theories regarding the umbrella man. The question is, what do you believe? Because I don't think there's a person out there that believes what the Warren Commission said was true. We all have thought, we've certainly had a lot of time to think about this, anybody who's given any thought to it. So we probably have some opinions about this. Who did it? Why did they do it? Are we ever going to know the whole deal? So I'm going to throw that open for discussion right now. We will take your comments as we continue our talk tonight on John F. Kennedy, his assassination, and what he meant to us. We will continue this conversation right now as we go on the Global Family Hour. This is South Cars. I'm KC2 RMO, and we're looking for you to come aboard.
Checked off.
Okay, we had that one RF station. Anybody else with a comment? Okay, nobody right now. So, Golf Zulu Echo, I believe that's you. Come on aboard and let's hear from you.
Okie doke. Yeah, it's hard to pinpoint anything. There's so many theories on. But the one I never heard anybody discuss yet was when Kennedy was running for election. I don't know whether it's his father or his Joe or who, but someone, he needed Illinois. He needed, and they contacted the mob boss, I forget what his name was, in Chicago, and he got the state for him. And then after he was elected, if you remember right, when Bobby was Attorney General, he started to go after the mob and all the crooks and everything. And I always thought that was a darn good reason for them to take care of it. They could take care. They could have had him shot without any problem at all, and not even have a trace back to him.
Well, you know, that's one of those theories. Okay, that's one of those theories that has subsequently been debunked as far as the mob connection, because that was a popular one. For a long time, there was a variation on that one too. I'd never heard the one so much about Kennedy's dad paying off the mob boss or enlisting the help of the mob boss in Chicago. But everybody enlisted the help of the mob boss in Chicago. You know, the way they did business there. But what the way I had actually heard it was that. The mob was being solicited by the CIA to do the dirty work to get rid of Castro, and that they had failed in their effort. That Castro decided that he was going to get even for that. That he wanted to assassinate the president. So he turned it around, and he paid a huge sum of money to the mob to do what to him what we wanted to do to Castro. That's one theory. There was a couple of other theories that were variations on that. That Kennedy had that the mob was angry at Bobby for all the prosecutions. They had pretty much had free rein up until that point. Bobby was coming down hard on organized crime. Bobby Kennedy, as Attorney General of the United States, and they could not make a compromise with the government, and they decided that that the head of the government had to go, and that was John Kennedy, and they were behind that. But nothing ever checked out in those theories. Nothing ever held water. The when you investigated it, they all kind of petered out. There really was no substance for those things, and you could not find a chain of events or evidence that substantiated it. Let me buy a nickel. What is interesting about that one is that although it doesn't involve them directly in the assassination of the president, it does again involve the CIA, who really had been getting free rein for years, ever since their inception. They were untouchable, and they had their own thing. One theory, and again, the CIA theory is the only thing that has not been able to be debunked, but the background on that is such that apparently John Kennedy wanted accountability from the CIA. The director of the CIA was a person by the name of Alan Dulles, who old school hidden government type of guy, secret government type of a guy. You know, you've heard of the term the secret government or the invisible government, the permanent government. The guys that you know, presidents come, presidents go, but these guys are there forever. And he was one of those guys, and he was the head of the CIA. He did not want to be accountable to John Kennedy. He did not want anything that agency was doing to be known to anybody, and he believed as a patriotic act, assembled elements within the CIA to assassinate the president. Let me buy a nickel. That is a theory that seems to be holding a lot of water right now, and certainly has a lot of popularity at this point. Whether or not that gets disproven in the future, I don't know, but there's a great deal of plausibility to it. To me, you know, when we're discussing what's your personal take on this whole thing, I believe that's true. I believe that the conditions were such that they were more than capable of doing it, and they were more than willing to do it. And that is why, to this day, 50 years later, we cannot get the information that we need to understand what happened to us and what was behind the killing of our president. Looks like Gordon has a second comment. Let's bring him aboard. KY6V, hello there, sir.
Well, thanks, Gary. No, I didn't really have a second, but I've got a third here sitting back thinking about you. You know, it's like Bond and his thrillers. Agent 007, licensed to kill. Are we saying that the CIA has that license to kill, but they're not saying anything about it? Over.
Yeah, I do believe that. And it's funny, I was watching Clear and Present Danger the other night, and I love that whole series of, you know, the Jack Ryan series. And it was kind of reminding me of all this. But I do believe that they do, or did, probably still do. That agency is, you know, it's funny. You have to have a CIA you know, you cannot be a superpower without having a super intelligence agency. I'll tell you something right now, and this may sound really, really weird, but then coming from me, what would you expect, you know? But there was a time when I had entertained the thought of working for the CIA, that I had really thought that that would have been a great career for me. You know, you didn't. One thing is, you didn't need to know a lot of math. So I said, sold, you know. But it fascinated me. And you know how things go. I was maybe 16, 17 years old, and I said, wow, you know, this would be pretty cool. By the time I was 18, I was playing rock and roll and doing all kinds of stuff. The CIA just didn't really have the appeal that I wanted, you know. But there was a moment there when that really looked pretty cool to me. But the point is that I think they were, you know, when you look at the nature of that agency, and you have to kind of, that might be a great net some night, too. Spies. Be awesome. At spies and numbers stations. I'd love to do that. We'll put that down on the maybe nets. It'd be pretty cool. I definitely would love to do a net on number stations anyway. But I had, you know, you look at the way they did business, and there was never any accountability in that organization in its history until 1960, when John Kennedy says, I want to know what you guys are doing, you know. And the way Washington works, let me buy a nickel, and using Washington and work in the same sentence is kind of an oxymoron, but the way Washington works is that you know, everybody's got their own little empires, and in this case, the CIA was its own big empire. And because of its nature, I'm sure they felt threatened when John Kennedy said, "I want to know what you're doing," and what I had read about it was they had felt threatened to the point where they felt Kennedy was going to dismantle the agency. And if you go back a year or so before Kennedy starts to ask for accountability from the CIA, you may remember an operation, a failed operation that we did, invading Cuba with the Bay of Pigs operation, which was CIA, which was 100% CIA. And, you know, Kennedy had actually, as a young, inexperienced president, been sold a bill of goods by outgoing members of the Eisenhower administration and the CIA. He okayed it. And it was early in his presidency, and he just kind of, it blew up in his face. It was a total disaster, and certainly didn't endear us to Fidel Castro, that's for sure. But again, you know, there was bad blood between the CIA and John Kennedy right from the get-go. And when he starts asking as their commander-in-chief, I want to know what you guys are doing, you can see where the resentment goes. Looks like Gordon had a re-comment, so we'll recheck in with Gordon. Come on aboard there, sir.
Well, thanks, Gary. I was just relating a little bit to what you just said. You know, I have a very close friend of probably 40, 45 years that is a retired doctor. And he raised a son that's a real nice and neat guy. Got him through his bachelor's degree at college, specialized in economics, and went to work for the CIA. And I talked with Mike, this friend of mine, just the other day here on Echolink, one-on-one. Wasn't here on the server. And I said, well, how's your son doing? He says, I don't know. I said, what do you mean you don't know? He says, I can't find out what he's doing. He won't tell me what he's doing. And further, he can't tell me what he's doing. Gary, KY6V, over.
And that's the way those guys work, you know? And you think about it, too. You know, you go back a few years, and what was that that agent's name? Valerie Plame, was it? Where the reporter blew that agent's cover. As a matter of fact, that's something I'm taking an ethics and journalism course, or an ethics and communications course, and that came up in it. But when you do something like that, I mean, these guys really can't discuss what they're doing or anything about work, and I suppose that even gets into their personal lives. You know, I can't even discuss this aspect of my personal life because it might somehow lay me to harm, you know. But you let out too much information on these people and they're dead. So you can kind of see why he was talking like that. And you can kind of see, if you extrapolate that and you look at that, I don't know how many people work for the CIA, and I don't think they tell you how many people work for the CIA. But, you know, when you look at that and you go through an agency, and you translate that one little example that you saw and make it a paradigm, and you see the way things are done in that agency, you can kind of understand that. But and that's exactly, and, you know, and that again lends credence, I think, to that whole business of them assembling a group of willing agents under the guise that, you know, you are doing for the good of this country something that is unthinkable. And you know, it's possible that some of those agents are still alive. You know, 50 years if you're a young man, 25, 26, and you're recruited by senior members of the CIA, let me buy a nickel, you're recruited to do this incredibly secret and incredibly unthinkable mission. At 50 years, you're in your 70s, yeah. I could see them holding on to it until the last person is dead. It makes sense. But we can't prove it. Like everything else, we can't prove it. And I'm going to talk a little bit about these last bit of records that remain sealed. There's a man involved here by the name of Morley, Jefferson Morley, from the Washington Post. Interesting name, because if you're an X-Files fan, you'll remember that the cigarettes that the cigarette-smoking man always smokes are Morley's. I don't think there's a coincidence, because there's about a 20-year time span between the two, but it's yet one more weird thing about this whole business. Looks like Pete, OVI, would like to board, and I will say, Pete, come on aboard, sir.
Okay. I like that. Boy, it's pretty interesting. But here again, in retrospect, what organization, what people would have to gain by doing such an act? You know, you gotta get to the people that are out in the world, you know, and they have the agenda too. What was the agenda at the day? What were the hotspots around the world that may have contributed to this action? And those are the things which you need to look at. In essence, of what was happening. The hotspots were developed, whether they were quenched, whether they were extinguished or not, nobody knows. And could hotspots like that what happened. Could they have gotten hotter if if the policy would have been carried out as as they wanted to? And you know, that's and extinguish the flame in order to avert a catastrophe. That might have been the condition that was that was favoring the action. And there's a lot of things which what they say at the 13 or something like that, where the whole thing is supposed to come out at. You know, those are the facts which it's going to tell you. I don't know whether we're going to still be around until they open it up or not. I don't know. But that would be interesting to find out what the mixture was and what the situation was. But why in the world would you want to keep something like that a secret until then? I mean, it doesn't make a difference whether you know it now or we don't know it then. It shouldn't make any difference. Those are my observations. Katie 4 Oscar, Virginia, back to Net Control.
Well, that's a great question, Pete, and really, it's kind of the question that's on everybody's mind. Now you had mentioned about the dates when they're going to unseal these things. 2013 was when they were supposed to, but now the new date is 2017 that they're pushing it out. And I wouldn't be surprised if they tried to push it out again. And you asked the question, why? Well, let's look at a few things. About the worst thing that you could be in the early 60s was a communist. Okay, that was it. I mean, you know, it's like that was about the worst deal that was going on. I think Kennedy, which is amazing. I don't understand where this thinking might have come from. Kennedy was a very very strong leader. He believed very much in dealing from a position of strength, but he was not a confrontational per se leader. He would negotiate peace through strength, you know, and at that time, I mean, and it was a different world, obviously. You know, there was that constant threat of nuclear war. We did not know really the strength of the Soviet Union, and it turns out they were much weaker than we were. We had clear nuclear superiority over them, but we had to deal with them as equals because we really didn't know. But Kennedy, in dealing in it from a position of strength, wanted peace. He wanted peace with Khrushchev. He had no particular love for Castro, but 90 miles away from the United States, He would have welcomed peace with Castro, but he wasn't going to do it on anybody's terms but his own. And I wonder, and again, it's conjecture, but I wonder, you know, did members of the CIA feel that this was some sort of a weakness and that they were compelled to act on that? I don't know. Maybe in 4 years we'll know if we get our hands on the records, but I'd love to know. Certainly before I leave this planet, I would love to know. Looks like we have another comment from KY6D, and we would love to hear it. So, Gordon, come on aboard.
Well, thank you, Gary. Boy, you almost caught me off track. I'd walked into the kitchen. KY6V here. You know, you shouldn't give me time to sit back and think, Gary, because it can be very dangerous. I need to ask you very openly and honestly, since I am the guy that is recording this session tonight and will be placing it on the website, I feel it necessary to ask you personally and in front of the audience if I have your permission to do so. Because I don't want the CIA coming knocking on your door or doing something nasty. Over.
Well, you know, if they come, it's been a good life.
They're welcome to us.
Steph says they're welcome to me, so, you know, I'm a goner, so, you know, that's fine. You can go right ahead and ask.
All right. I want to make sure that the audience has a retake on this. I have your permission to post, sir. Over.
Yes, you do. You most certainly do. And it's not just me. I think they'd have to take care of 80% of the American people anyway. So hopefully they'll get to them before they get to me. I'm a little fish in a big pond. And there's bigger fish to fry, that's for sure. But I do. I really do believe that theory. And I you know, until something is presented to us that's more genuine than that, this is the most plausible thing out there. And then again, it's the only theory that they can't debunk. So I'm willing to go along with it. And, you know, until such time that somebody gives us the truth. And that's all we really want, is the truth. So whether it's the CIA or whether it's some other agency or whether it's the mafia or Martians or whatever, just give us the truth. That's all that we want to know. We're talking tonight, and by the way, thank you, Gordon. We're talking tonight about John F. Kennedy, the assassination, your memories of the president, all those things that are associated with it. You know, we're talking about these records and what have you. There's just give you a brief rundown on this. 5 decades after President John F. Kennedy was fatally shot and long after official inquiries ended, thousands of pages of investigative documents remain withheld from public view. Now, the contents of these files are partially known and intriguing, and conspiracy buffs are not the only ones seeking to open them for a closer look. Some serious researchers believe the off-limits files could shed valuable new light on nagging mysteries of the assassination, including what U.S. intelligence agencies knew about the accused assassin Lee Harvey Oswald before November 22, 1963. Now, Rick had put a reference in the text box about a story, I believe it was NPR. Let me just scroll up a little bit here so I can see it. It was, yeah, Frontline, NPR, about Oswald in Mexico City. And Rick, maybe you could comment on that in a little bit. Come back in and let's hear from you about that. But there is a void. When we start talking about Lee Harvey Oswald and his activities before the assassination in Dallas, we know he was in Mexico City, we know he was meeting with someone, but we don't know who, and we don't know about what. Now, maybe this link has some information for it, but we'll ask Rick to share that in just a moment. But just to get back to what we're talking about here. It turns out that several hundred of the still classified pages concern a deceased CIA agent by the name of George Joandes, whose activities just before the assassination and fascinatingly during a government investigation years later have tantalized researchers for years. This is not about conspiracy, it's about transparency, said Jefferson Morley, a former Washington Post reporter, an author embroiled in a decade-long lawsuit against the CIA, seeking release of the closed documents. I think the CIA should obey the law. I don't think most people think that's a crazy idea. Morley's effort has been joined by others, including G. Robert Blakey, the chief counsel for a House investigation into the JFK assassination in the 70s. But so far, the files and thousands of more pages, primarily from the CIA, remain off limits at a National Archives Center in College Park, Maryland. There is interest in this stuff. There is mystery involved with this stuff. And Rick, if you're there, if you can hear us, if you're within the sound of my voice, as they used to say, you had some information from Frontline. Can you share that with us? VXP, come on aboard.
This is N1VXP. Yeah, I put that up there. I was reading over that. And the more you read about it, the more it definitely sounds like what Oswald was saying, that he was a patsy. It definitely sounds too much coincidence, but if you read over the article, it says that the CIA, Castro, and Khrushchev were all involved, or somewhat involved, in some way or form. But the CIA tried to cover up and did a very poor job of completely covering that up. It said they actually admitted, you know, tried, but too many things were actually released, but nobody paid attention to. And definitely, it's a good net. I really enjoy it. And like I say, I have a very strong personal interest in the activities. N1GXP, back to net control.
Well, thank you, Rick. I'm having fun doing this, too. You know, I'll tell you one thing. Think about this for a minute. Let me just paint a picture for you. You know, here I am. I'm Lee Harvey Oswald. All my life, I've been basically a screw-up, okay? You know, that's pretty much the way he portrayed himself, and it's pretty much the way he was looked at by the world. He comes back from Russia. He's denounced the United States. He's begged to come back, you know, didn't like the way things were in the Soviet Union. Still feels sympathy for causes like hands off of Cuba and stuff like that. You know, and now he's looking around. He's looking for somebody to hook up with to be a success. And the CIA has, you know, their eyes on these organizations, and they see this guy, and he fits the perfect profile for a patsy. And they build him up. You know, they recruit this guy, and they say, you know, we're going to get you involved in this. And we're gonna make you a hero, but you're going to have to do, you know, the most dastardly thing that has ever happened in history. But you're gonna be a big man for this. And they play him, and then they leave him out to dry after this, and they take care of this they take care of all the evidence a couple of days later when they have Jack Ruby, who, by the way, you know, if you go into his background, there is mafia connections or mob connections, whatever you want to call them, and some CIA type connections too. So you have Ruby come and take care of the evidence, and you know, no problem anymore. It's interesting. You know, this is a series of unanswerable mysteries. We have many comments out there. Let me buy a nickel. It appears that that Steve, Victor Hotel, and OBI have some comments too. Victor Hotel, come on aboard. We'd love to hear from you tonight.
Good evening, Gary, and good evening to everyone on board the net. I'm late to the party tonight. Let me make sure before I launch into this. Has anyone mentioned the silver and gold connection?
Well, first of all, you have a standing invitation to the party, so you can never be late. All you have to do is show up. No, nobody's mentioned the silver and gold, and we'd love to hear it. Steve, let's hear about that.
Okay. Well, from the start, this country used the treasury to mint gold coins and to produce silver certificates. At some point, we switched over to the Federal Reserve Bank and put out Federal Reserve notes. Interesting thing about that group, it is run by a board of directors, and the board of directors since inception are secret. Even today, the people who run the Federal Reserve in terms of their board are secret, and they make a lot of money from operating all the money that flows through there, or at least all the digits that flow through there. JFK signed an executive order that put the Treasury back in control and ordered the production of silver certificates. My favorite theory is because of the executive order, which would have cut the big bankers out of the Federal Reserve, that he made many enemies there, and it could be because of the business side of the house that he met his fate. That's it, KF5VH.
Wow, I had not heard that one before. It's as plausible as anything else, isn't it? You know, you could see that. United States, as far as I know, and maybe somebody could correct this, but I believe we went off the gold standard sometime in the 30s. I think Franklin Roosevelt took us off the gold standard, and that's when we started using the silver certificates. I wonder about that. That's a lot of money. You know, the United States Treasury is worth a lot of money. If you've got a private group that are involved in the administration of that, and they're getting some sort of a percentage of it, or you know, there's some sort of an association with that figure going into their pocket. That's motivation enough, I suppose, to go after the president. That's very, very interesting, and I wonder if anybody else had heard that. We will welcome your comment, and we will welcome that comment right after we hear from OVI. Thank you, Steve, and we'll go to OVI right now. Pete, I think you were having a conspiracy of your own. Try it one more time. Just do a test 1-2, and let's see if we hear from you.
I had the microphone muted. I get used to this headset. There's a little button right in the ear. And you are pushing, all of a sudden, lo and behold, you're back on it again. What I was saying about this situation is that the bankers, lo and behold, the bankers, think of it, they run the world. They run the world, no matter what anybody's going to tell you. The bankers run the world. That's a known fact. There's no stipulation, there's no other thing. The bankers are king. You mess with the bankers, you don't want to mess with the bankers. Keep the bankers happy, content, keep the profit margin the right way, keep the money flowing. The people invest in banks. You put your life savings in the banks, you want to make it grow. You stymie the growth of a person. You know, that's a moral sin from Katie for Oscar Vick, India. And think about the bank. When you put your money in the bank, you expect the money to be there when you withdraw it. Over. Katie Flosker, Virginia. And every comment.
Hey, thank you, Pete. I'll tell you one thing. I've never, ever been able to make a banker happy. Usually it's get out of here. You know, it's like, take that money with you. I was looking up this some information on the silver and gold theory, and very quickly here, and it boils down to this. And just like Steve was saying, when President Kennedy signed there was an executive order to turn the Treasury Department. Specifically, the Treasury, the constitutional power to create and issue currency without going through the privately owned Federal Reserve Bank. Now, I didn't know this until just now, but apparently the Federal Reserve is privately owned. I didn't know that. I thought that was a federal institution. It says federal, but apparently it is privately owned. President Kennedy's Executive Order Number 11110 gave the Treasury Department the explicit authority to issue silver certificates against any silver bullion, silver, or standard silver dollars in the Treasury. This meant that for every ounce of silver in the U.S. Treasury's vault, the government could introduce new money into circulation based on the silver bullion physically held there. That's interesting. I suppose if we, you know, it's something that on the surface it's kind of surprising that the Federal Reserve is not a government agency. But more importantly, what the heck were these guys doing, you know, with all this money? You know, what the heck? And when the president takes this power from them, yeah, I guess that's a pretty powerful motivator. So let's throw that one in the mix, huh? As a pretty plausible theory. I don't know if it takes the CIA off the hook, but it gives us another place to look. That's a lot of money. And that's a lot of motivation for certain people. So that's Steve. Thank you for that. That gave us another interesting point. If you haven't guessed by now, we are talking about the assassination of John Kennedy. We're talking about your memories of John Kennedy, and we've been having a pretty good time doing it too. It's been a real good net. And what we'll do is let's take some more check-ins. Basically, anything you want to comment about, we've been all over the place, and it's been great tonight. And I really enjoy that when we kind of get off and on a tangent, and we knock it around a little bit. It's great. And so we'd like to hear from you. Any thoughts on your favorite conspiracy theory or anything else to do with the assassination of the president? We'll take your comments right now. This is South Cars, and I'm KC2RMO. Okay, not hearing anything right now, but we have had some good ones tonight. So I do want to mention a couple of things where we were talking about the documents being sealed. We mentioned that. Did want to mention too that the year again was 2017 that they were talking about. 2017 for those documents supposedly to come to light. So that's about it. Oh, the Eternal Flame. I wanted to mention about the Eternal Flame. And I don't know, again, it depends on how old you were, but if you can recall the lighting of the Eternal Flame by the president's wife, Jackie Kennedy. I think that's an image. I just saw that come up. Kathy, I just saw that come up in the box, too. I was talking about that, and I saw it come up in the box, too. That's an image that you'll never forget, if you recall that. On a perfect fall morning at the Arlington National Cemetery, Secretary of the Army John McHugh relit the Eternal Flame, which marks the final resting places of John F. Kennedy, the 35th President of the United States, and First Lady Jacqueline Kennedy. A flame has actually been burning continuously at that site since the President was buried there on November 25, 1963. It was originally lit by Mrs. Kennedy. Let me buy a nickel. Now, recently, work began to upgrade the apparatus that keeps the flame illuminated. In order to make that happen, the flame was transferred to a nearby temporary Eternal Flame. Now, once the upgrade was complete, McHugh transferred it back to the original flame. The Eternal Flame has been burning now continuously for 50 years. The new hardware, more modern and efficient, will keep it burning many years to come. It'll be a beacon of hope and remembrance for all who see it, said Patrick K. Hallahan, the executive director of Army National Military Cemeteries and Arlington National Cemetery. So the Eternal Flame has been repaired. It has been made good for many years to come. And we will take one more final round of check-ins before we close things down for the night. So last call. We will take one more round right now as the Global Family Hour continues here on South Cars. Okay, and nothing heard, so we will say adios. It's been a good net tonight. I have really enjoyed this, and I hope you have too. President Kennedy was an extraordinary man in an extraordinary time. He meant a lot to so many people, and I think that the title of the bird song, written to honor him, sums it up. He was a friend of mine, and to all of us. Thank you all for participating. It's been great to be with you. This has been SouthCars, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. VoIPNet schedules and general information may be found on the VoIP.SouthCars.com website. Your net control for this session has been Gary, KC2RMO, saying 73, and closing this VoIP session. Thanks for your participation. This net is closed.
Thank you, Gary. 84 Oscar Victoria. El saluto and toodaloo from 84 Oscar Victoria.
Toodaloo to you, sir, and you have a great week. KC2RMO clear.